continue our study tonight of the book of Joshua. Excuse me.
Go back to chapter 3 and verse 11. That's what this thing is saying, the rebirth through water.
Wait a minute. 3:11. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord is of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Is that the verse you're looking at?
Yes.
All right, and what about it?
I put down the rebirth through water.
The rebirth of the water. Through the water. So they went down into the water, much like they did at the Red Sea, and much like our figurative baptism is to get through there. So, yes, they were passing through into the Jordan. Okay. Several weeks ago, Joanne asked me about why there was a half tribe of Manasseh on one side of the Jordan and a half tribe on the other side. As you can see from this, Bob took pity on me last week. If I can do this right, he took pity on me last week after my pointer would not work, and so he got me one. So this one works. I can put this on the clock back there and everything like that. So here we have Manasseh and East Manasseh and West Manasseh, and we're going to talk for just a minute about this, and then we'll go into the lesson. But I mentioned last week that Joseph had, in essence, a double portion by virtue of what Jacob did. And so, if you look, and I'll just give you some verses that make reference to this. Genesis 41:51, Manasseh is the firstborn of Joseph, and he says, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. So Manasseh means forget my hardship. Verse 52, it says, Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of affliction. And maybe last week and perhaps the week before that, I said, it's always Ephraim and Manasseh. That's the way you hear this, Ephraim and Manasseh. And in the back of my mind, I couldn't figure out why that was, but now I do. After reading through here, Genesis 46:20, Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, of whom Asenah, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On, bore him. And then when Jacob is about to die, he gets ill. Joseph takes Manasseh, I'll refer to him in their birth order, Manasseh and Ephraim in to see him. Jacob, this is Jacob talking in Genesis 48, verse 5. And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Okay, I'm taking these two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Are mine, and he even refers, he says, Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine as Reuben and Simeon are. So Reuben was the firstborn there, and Jacob is saying, these are now my children. And he goes on and says, the children that you fathered after them can be yours or shall be yours. They shall be called by the name of their brothers in the inheritance. And then this is where I got mixed up last week or week before last. I remembered this, but for some reason my mind just went blank. When Joseph takes Manasseh and Ephraim for the blessing from Jacob, he puts Joseph's hand on Manasseh, which would be what you would do. That would be the firstborn and the one that was the that had the firstborn rights there, or the preferred child, and his left hand on Ephraim. Jacob switches them, and Joseph says, oh, no, you got this wrong. And so in verse 19, he says, actually 18, and Joseph said to his father, not this way, my father. since this one is the firstborn, put your right hand on his head. But his father, that's Jacob, refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He shall also become a people, and he shall be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother, that's Ephraim, shall be greater than he, that's Manasseh, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them and goes through that in verse 20. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you, Israel, pronounce blessings, saying, God will make you as Ephraim and Manasseh. And so he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Israel, who is Jacob, says to Joseph, behold, I'm about to die, but God will be with you and bring you into the land. Moreover, I have given you rather than to your brothers one mountain slope that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword. Go, and I'm going a little bit further along here. If you go to Numbers 135, when they came out of Egypt, Manasseh had 32,200 numbered men in his tribe. When they're getting ready in Numbers 26:34, going into Canaan, he's got 52,700. So he's almost doubled there. And so then here's where the story starts, or what I really wanted to talk about for just a second. Numbers 32, Reuben and Gad ask Moses for land on the east side over here. Reuben and Gad say, okay, we're tribesmen. This land is good for tribal stuff. This is where our flocks need to be. We'd like to have this. We don't want to go over here into this land over here. And so Moses says, sure, but you got to go and fight. You've got to go with them over there. Now, it doesn't say, but the next verse there says that Numbers 34:23, of the people of Joseph of the tribe of Manasseh, Numbers 32 and verse 33, Moses gave to the half tribe of Manasseh, and he names the families in here, Maker and Jair. So there were two of the families of Manasseh that wanted this land over here. It doesn't say they asked for them, but you would just have to just about assume that they did. And so Moses gave them this land right here. And that gets us up to Joshua. And when we get to Joshua 17, we're going to find that Joshua says, well, y'all are a big tribe, so y'all need more than two portions. And so they get more here. And that's what really happened here. Maker and Jair were part of one family that was a part of Manasseh. And so they wanted this along with Gad and Reuben. And the other part got over here on the western side of the Jordan River, and they asked for more land, and they even said, well, what you've given us is not enough. And Joshua is going to tell them here, what you need to do then is go clear out some of this stuff, because, you know, there's plenty of land here. You just need to, take it and use it for what you want. Now, what you can't see from this flat map up here is the difference in the topography. This land up here is hilly. It's, you know, there's the Golan Heights right there. And so this would be probably good for herding goats and sheep and, you know, all that stuff that they did. But it's probably not good for farming. When you get right here by Megiddo is on a tail, and this land out here is flat. So it would be good for farming. It would be good for a number of different things. So without knowing the topography of the land, which there are mountains on both sides of this, you can see those mountains there. they were picking out the land that they said would fit what they wanted. So half of the tribe is over here, and we're going to find in Joshua 17 that the other half is going to be right here. The really prime land is right here. And I don't know if you can see this from where you are, but the land of Gad goes all the way up here to the Sea of Galilee. You see that little line right there? That's their land. So Manasseh has been shut out of the Jordan River on this side. If you can see that, but the difference in the color, it goes up here to the Sea of Galilee. So they got this. So, Joanne, that's my best explanation. That's all I got. You know, we don't know why there's a half tribe on each side, but the way that I read this, Moses gave the land on the east side to Maker and Jer, and then Joshua gave the land on the west side to two other ones. So that's the best that I can give of what happened and why they have that. So there's no really definitive answer, but we're not told in here, but a pretty good guess would be this tribe's so big that they needed more of this land. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, what? Yep. You understood it until I explained it to you. Well, that sounds really bad, Joanne. So I've just wasted 10 minutes of this class. Well, anyway, that's all I know. And if someone else would like to expound a little bit more, as we continue through the book of Joshua, we're going to see some other things that I'm delighted, absolutely delighted to do that, because it's really stuff I wanted to know too. It was. Okay, so tonight, I'm hoping that we finish lesson 3. If we don't go ahead and finish this, whoever teaches this next quarter is still going to be trying to conquer Jericho. So I'm trying to move on here. We ended last week in chapter 4 with verse 15. What had happened, they had crossed across the Jordan on dry land because the priests were... the priest walked out into or walked at the side of the Jordan River, which was overflowed. It dried up and all the people went through. It must have been a big procession. Should have taken a long time for them to do that. But anyway, all the people went across there. They picked up the 12 stones, and they're going to put 12 stones at Gilgal, and then they're going to put 12 stones out there where the... where the ark was, so that when the water goes down, you'll be able to go out there and say, okay, here's, when somebody asks you, what do those stones mean? The answer to that question is, those stones mean that this river, which was overflowing its banks on this particular day, God provided a way for us to get through there, just like he did the Red Sea, and we walked through it on dry land, which would have been a miracle. That's all you could call that. Verse 7, these stones shall be a memorial forever. These stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. And same thing there in verse 10. Joshua, the priest bearing the ark, stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished. That is, they did all the stuff they were going to according to what the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded them. The people passed over in haste. So that gets us up to chapter 14. I mean, to verse 14. We begin with 15. Command the priest bearing the ark of the testimony to come up out of the Jordan. So they're standing there. Everybody's come across. They put the stones out. Command them to come up out of there, up out of the Jordan. And when the priest bearing the ark of the covenant of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, soles of the priests were lifted up. Last week, I think we talked about how the water had backed up to Adam. Well, there's where Adam is. So you see it's up the river. This is so neat to be able to go from one to the other, Ori. I'm just loving this. you can see the little thing where the river comes up, and then you look right here. That's where Adam is, just north. It looks like maybe 10 miles, 15 miles north of where they cross the Jordan River. Okay, I'm sorry, did somebody say something? The people came up out of there. The souls of the priests were lifted up on dry land. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. They encamped at Gilgal east on the east border of Jericho. No one really knows where Gilgal is, but this is as good a guess as anybody has of where that is. It's right around Jericho. As you can see, it's almost in the shadow of Jericho. So there's all your people that would have been out there camped out, and they would have seen all these people coming through here. They started in Shittim, and they're over into Gilgal. More in chapter in 21 to 24. What do these stones mean? You shall let your children know. Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us as we passed over, so that all the people of the earth may know the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. So what is the reason that they walked across dry land? God. And it showed not only the Israelites, one, that Joshua was now in charge, but two, that God was leading them, and God was going to do what he had said, because this obviously is a miracle of being able to walk across there in dry lands. So that pretty well ends chapter 4, unless y'all have something. All the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. I think that's important that we see there that they are given this mission, and they are to fear God forever. And we see forever a lot of different times in a lot of different places, but here the Israelites are instructed. Well, I have a footnote here that says forever or all the days, so that would be all of your days. All right, that gets us to chapter 5. This is kind of a strange chapter division, but when we get to 5:1, it looks like it should have been in 4. As soon as the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they crossed, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. So what would the translation of that be? The air just came out of their balloons. You know, they that had to be a disheartening event for them. Bill, I'm sorry.
That's right. It says, as soon as the kings and everybody heard, so apparently they had spies looking at that gigantic massive, and it had to scare the people.
You wouldn't have to have much looking for them, would you? I mean, you know, you're talking about all these people that have come across there. The people on the eastern side of the Jordan have already set up their tents. They've set up their pens for their animals. You know, all of this has happened, and it just looks like the Canaanites. You know, they just gave up. You know, it seems like that. That, as he says here, their hearts have melted, and what that means to me is they were scared to death of what was going to happen. Robert.
It looks like on the map that's up there right now, from the River Jordan to Jericho, it looks like 10 miles, roughly.
Yeah, it's no more than that. It's less than that, actually.
You've got, what, 2,000 people?
2 million people. Yeah, you've got almost 2 million people that are that are in there. Here's something that we'll talk about later. But you're right. That's almost no distance at all. Maybe 5 miles to there. We're sitting right here close to Jericho. Look at how close. They're within 10 miles of Jerusalem. And how long is it going to take them to capture Jerusalem? We're not going to read about it in Joshua. It's, you know, the Jebusites are going to repel them from there. But I mean, the prime, this is where Mount Moriah is, and you know, all of this, they're 10, 15 miles at the most from Jerusalem, and they go, they go around the north, and I've got another map, they go up and do some of these other things over here, Bethel, there's Ai, and then circle down around that and go right around Jerusalem. obviously there's something there that they either didn't understand what the significance of Jerusalem was, or maybe it didn't matter at that point. Maybe it was not significant, Bill.
If God's leading them around those places, one of the things about war is you encircle your enemy. And if they keep going around Jerusalem, that's about what they're going to end up doing.
Jerusalem would have been a much more fortified city than Ai or Jericho. Jericho's small. I mean, Jericho's, you look at the pictures in here and you see, you can see, it's not big at all. And that's going to be something when we get to talking about them going around there, not a big deal. Walk around there fairly quickly. It has not, or would not be a daunting task for them to walk around there 7 times and, you know, do all the stuff that was done. Okay, so their hearts have melted. The Canaanites are, pretty much out of steam. Says even all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea. They are getting to the point that there's a following of people that are tracing where they, you know, where they've gone. Okay, chapter 5, verses 2 through 9. Talks about circumcision, and at that time the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the sons of Israel a second time. Keep that in mind. Circumcise the sons of Israel a second time. So Joshua made flint knives, circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeoth Haraloth, and this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All of the males of the people who came out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. Though all the people who came out had been circumcised, yet all the people who were born on the way had, after they had come out of Egypt, had not been circumcised. For the people of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all the nation and the men of war who came out of Egypt perished because they did not obey the voice of the Lord. The Lord swore to them he would not let them see the land that the Lord had sworn to them to give to their fathers, a land of milk and honey. So it was their children whom he raised up in their place that Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. And when the circumcising the whole nation was finished, they remained in their places in the camp until they healed. And the Lord said, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the name of that place is called Gilgal today, which means rolled away. So the reproach of Egypt has rolled away. So here's my question. Genesis 17:10 says that circumcision is going to be a memorial. It's going to be a ritual. It's going to be something that you're going to do forever throughout the generations. Genesis 12:44-48 says that even the people that are in the land, you circumcise them as you did the people that were the natives of the land. So what happened here? Was it because they were being led by a faithless leader? Wouldn't think so. I never heard anybody say that Moses was a faithless person. So why did they quit? Yep. So what was the procedure there, Joanne? It has to do with this number, doesn't it? On the eighth day, they were all to be circumcised. So what do y'all think happened here? There's no way that you'd ever convince me that Moses was a faithless person and just, you know, didn't do what God had said. So was there a waiver while they were in, you know, while they were there? Was there something? Because what this says is, and this was right, this is according to everything else that we've got, all these men that were going to go into Canaan, they were all born in the wilderness. Yep. I'm sorry. Say that again. Yep. Yeah, that all the ones that left Egypt were dead.
Would it, I mean, would it have something to do with, you know, there in verse 9, that they were talking about the reproach of Egypt and the fact that, you know, that generation in itself, perhaps, I don't know if there's anything definitive that they need to say this or not. I'm sitting there looking at the same thing. When was the last time it actually talks about circumcision? And you're right, it goes all the way back to Exodus 12. It talks about it in Leviticus about how they're supposed to be sojourners. But there isn't a process where they're all doing up until they're right before they leave out of Egypt. You knew that it was being done at that point because obviously it was commanded. But you gotta wonder, and maybe even go back to what Erica said in the passing through into this land. They're making this covenant with God as a new generation, and therefore there had to be blood as a result. We all know that a covenant requires blood, and of course, you would obviously be blood of those males. That's my best guess. I don't even know if I'm anywhere close.
Yeah, it doesn't say. I'm sorry, go ahead. They had a lot of challenges while they were out there in the wilderness. And maybe this was not one of them, one of the things that they remembered. But I've read this over and over again, and it just comes back to, did Moses tell them? Moses would have had to said, no, you don't have to do this. And I mean, this should have been, everybody should have been circumcised on their eighth day when they were there. So it shouldn't have been, I won't say not a big deal, but it, you know, it looks to me like that, you know, they would have continued that, but for some reason they didn't. And, you know, I don't know, but the writer here points out that just had not been a part of their practice while they were in the wilderness. No.
It could be that he didn't allow them to do that while they were wandering, you know, under those pretenses. That might have been part of the punishment. Again, you'll never know.
You'll never know, but it would make me think that somewhere the communication with Moses was, they don't have to do this. Because I'm pretty sure Moses would have followed the directions that he was given. Matter of fact, I would be surprised were it otherwise. But anyway, that's just something to think about. It's kind of surprising, but then, you know, maybe it's not. Okay, so The reproach of Egypt is rolled away. Gilgal, they have now renewed the covenant that they've got with Abraham by circumcision. You know, that is a part of what the circumcision is. And so, you know, here's a covenant act that has to do with Abraham, just like this covenant act has to do with Abraham that they're about to go across the river or go and attack Jericho. All right. 10. I'm sorry. Somebody say something. 10. While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening in the plains of Jericho. And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And the manna ceased that day after they ate of the produce of the land. There was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. So what is the significance there? That land of milk and honey, you know, they have been promised that land, you know, for all this time, and it's going to be wonderful. Even the spies said, this is a land of milk and honey. You know, it's wonderful. You got the grapes, you got the, you know, this, you know, all of these different things. And so they've got, you know, they're there now. They are over in the land, and they're close to some of the most fertile of the land because they're right there next to the Jordan River. So, so how long have they been in the land?
A
couple of days. How much did they grow?
Yes.
Not a bit. So there's a fulfillment of that promise. And you're right. I do remember that. I don't know exactly where it is. I'll look for that. But yeah, you're going to feast on things that you didn't grow. And what about the significance of, we have just come across the Jordan River and it's Passover. How many Passovers have gone by since the original one? 40. So almost to the day. Almost to the day they have come across and gone into the promised land 40 years after the original Passover. And, you know, that's significant, I suppose, that they are now in the moving into the promised land, and the manna ceases, and the manna ceases because
they don't need it
anymore. You know, why would you eat manna when you've got grapes and whatever all these other things are that unleavened. They ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. So, I mean, this has got to be a feast for them. I mean, it's really got to be a feast for them that they are now over here and they are enjoying the fruits of what they've waited a long time for. Bill?
It makes you think that all those years they ate
You know, a cousin of mine had a heart attack 20 years ago or something like this, and his doctor's instructions were, don't eat anything that doesn't taste like cardboard. And, you know, I think of that when I think of this. You know, manna had a little sweet taste to it, and, you know, they had the quails and all of this. But this has got to be... By the way, that didn't work for my cousin. He's gained 200 pounds back, and you know, he's He gave that up, but yeah, but the doctor said nothing but something that tastes like cardboard, and I thought about that when I was thinking of what they were doing. I mean, you know, this had got has got to be a wonderful thing for them. Okay, so the Passover is observed. The manna ceases. There are 21 questions on here. If there's something that y'all would like to talk about, I'd be glad to for us to discuss those. Absent of that, we will begin next week, Lord willing, on lesson four. Lesson four, five, and six, I think, are out there. I'm sorry, Levi. What? Deuteronomy 6, 10. And I had it highlighted. Yeah. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give you with great and good cities that you did not build, and houses full of all the good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant, when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. So yes, that is the fulfillment of what was there. I really don't have anything else unless there's something that that I've missed or something else that we'd like need to talk about. The questions, they were at Shittim. Israel came across because the priest had carried the ark into the middle and allowed them to pass over. I don't think there's anything that was really... 12 there, what's the purpose of the memorials? To show the Lord's power would be one of the things that I would say that was. But one of the other things that I've put in here are God's big on memorials, always has been, and as we can tell, will be. You know, these are things that let's remember this. You know, let's remember what happened here, and, you know, a pile of rocks there that's got... one of the rocks for each of the tribes is something that, you know, many people would have come by there and ask about that, and it would have been a good way of telling what had happened. You got me. Okay, lesson four next week, Lord willing.